My name is Tino Magnetta, and welcome to another episode of GT Radio. My name is Tino Magnetta, and welcome to another episode of GT Radio. And Jamie and I have been talking on the phone for 10 minutes, so we're just going to cut you in on the conversation we've been having. I have never done this before on this show, but her and I had an amazing conversation. I said, you know what, Jamie, we're going to use that. Forget the opening I wrote. So welcome, Jamie. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing this evening?
We're doing great. We're having great conversations. So let's just jump right back in because, you know, I think this is the heart of any casino, and everybody should really think about this a lot. But we were talking about customer service. So tell us a little bit about how you view that.
You know, Tino, as we were speaking about that, I've always told our staff, you know, slot machines, I've always said, you know, slot machines are like everything else, arcade machines, they're a dime a dozen. And we better set ourselves and find a niche where we set ourselves aside from any other casino environment, any other entertainment venue, and we better have something that just we're good at and we outstand anyone else on. And that is customer service and guest experience. And we strive hard to be sure, and we've worked hard ever since High Stakes Bingo, is to be sure that we are known for our customer service. We are known for that guest experience. We know our guests. We strive hard to know our guests by first name basis. I mean, it's something I think is very, very important in the industry today that needs to set you aside. And if you're not working on it now, you better start working on it. And that is that guest that you want repeat visits out of on a daily basis, and you want to see them back in that property. And you better start with giving them the great service they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a huge thing. Now, you were saying something about family before. You were saying tell us a little bit about that.
Well, let me go back just a moment to High Stakes Bingo days, because that's where we all started in 1987. But
okay.
a lot of our players that come into our property when we first open those doors, some of our same players are in our casino to this day, and they know those associates by name. I mean, they will bring them gifts. They check on when they have babies. They bring baby shower gifts when they get married. I mean, when they graduate college, we become part of their family. We really you really get to know people, and we're small. Okay, let's say we're in Durant, Oklahoma. Yes, we're not like Las Vegas, but you can have a relationship with your guests any property you're at. I don't care if it's the largest to the smallest. You can have a relationship with your guests, and I think that's where I feel we really become part of their family. I mean, there's some people that come to our property have no children whatsoever. Our associates become part of their family. Our associates become their children, you know, and they check on them. We relate to them. We had a lady just pass away not too long ago. She stepped foot in our operation the first day we opened in High Stakes Bingo. A lot of us went to her funeral. I spoke at her funeral because her family... Her family knew, or her family felt that connected to us in Durant, Oklahoma at the Choctaw Casino.
That's amazing. That's incredible. It really
is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It really is.
Yeah. So that's being tied to the community, right? And most native casinos are like that, right?
Oh, yes. I would say majority of
native
casinos.
They're tied to the community. Yeah.
They definitely are. They're part of a community. I mean, they are really what makes some communities. They really are the community in some of our rural Oklahoma.
So how do you feel, what are some of the ways that people can, what are some of like the basic things that people could do to make their customer service better? Do they need to talk to their staff? Do they, what are some of the things that, the key things they need to do?
Well, first off, I think a lot of people, I started at the front door. Just one of the things we've always done, we started at the front door. No, we really started at the corner or at the pavement as you pull in. And I think customer service starts with your property being very eye-appealing, very clean, the appearance of everything, your associates all clean, shined, no wrinkles on clothing, big smiles on their faces. I've always told them, guys, if you got a problem at the back door, leave it at the back door. When you come in the back door, get those smiles on your faces. This is your movie theater. This is your stage. You're hitting that stage now. So all those feelings, all those bad things that happen at home today, or the fight with the husband, end that right now. We come through the back door, we get big smiles on our faces, and we start our customer relation. I mean, you speak to people, you make eye contact with people, you help people. If there's something they don't know where to find something, take your time and take them to it. I mean, take time with people. Our world has gotten away from taking time with people. We quit doing that. It's just, let's point our finger, let's say, oh, it's over yonder, or oh, it's down that direction, or it's over there to your left. Take them over to your left. Take them to the Coke fountain.
Yes.
Take them to the front desk. I mean, it's all about a relationship building. It's all about taking time to listen, to focus, and take care of your guest.
Absolutely. Whenever I hear you speak, I feel inspired, and the people who listen to you also feel inspired. Where does this inspirational outlook come? You know, where does it come from? What's the roots of it?
Well, it's hard to say where it all comes from. I have a kind of a plaque on my wall, and I'm looking at that plaque on my wall right now, and it says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and it's Philippians 4:13, and I believe in that every day. I believe in that. I live by that. I just think that's you've got to have a reason to get up every morning. You've got to have a reason to exist, and it's all you. No one else can make you have that reason to get up every morning or to exist. It's all in your own passion to succeed. And I have a passion to succeed. I have a passion for people around me to succeed. It's not all just about me. It's I want a better life for everyone. I want a better life for every associate that's working in our properties. I want a better life for every tribal member. And I think that's where it all comes from, that I just want a good life, and I have a passion for everyone to succeed. And, you know, that was... I think my mom and dad probably, that was some of the core values I feel like they raised me by. You don't even think about defeat. You don't even have negative thoughts in your mindset. I mean, you have a positive outlook on life, and you walk positively daily. And that's how I was raised. That's just how I see things. I mean, sure, I get up every morning and I have a bad day. Sure, I come to work sometimes and I'm not in the greatest mood. But I don't let a lot of people know that because I just I love people. I love life. I truly love life. I love what God gives me every day. I love the opportunity to wake up in this world every day and get to maybe change someone's life today.
Yeah, just amazing stuff. You know, one of the things that we always talked about a little bit is, you know, the elders and how much wisdom they had, you know, and what they brought and the changes they made, you know, and how incredible they were. Tell us about some of the, you know, the roots of the Choctaw Nation and how they shaped the future for you, for your tribe.
Okay. You know, our elders are our foundation. I mean, they are our rock.
Yep.
I think about, and we do a Trail of Tears walk every year, and I go and do that Trail of Tears walk every year, and I try to think about what they went through on that Trail of Tears walk, what trials and tribulations and weather and turmoil and no shoes, no clothes, I mean, no coats, nothing, you know, and what they've gone through and how they have succeeded. And I think sometimes I look at things and think, oh, gosh, man, I sure want this or I want that. And, you know, life is really giving me a hard blow at the moment or something like that. I don't sit and dwell on that because I think, my Lord, I've got it so good. I don't even realize how well I do have it. And our tribe now has it so much better than we had many years ago. And I have to think back on those Trail of Tears walks and what those elders went through. My mom, my dad was half-blood Choctaw. You know, I never realized we wasn't rich, because my mom and dad never, ever let me go without. I was very blessed and very fortunate. I know there's many kids and many lives and many families in rural Oklahoma that live in poverty, did live in poverty, still live in poverty, because it still exists in our world today. I wish it didn't, and I think one day it won't, but, you know, it still does. But that's our mission. That's our drive to correct that, and we will someday. We will correct that. We will conquer poverty one day in rural Oklahoma. But with my dad, let me go back just a moment. I mean, he was a half-blood Choctaw, and you know, he had a rough life. He had a very rough life. He had brothers,
and most of the elders did, right, back then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, you're
right.
It
was everybody, right? Those were the times. They were rough.
There were rough times. Absolutely, there were rough times.
Yeah.
I mean, we had terrible alcoholism in our family. I had uncles that were terribly hooked on alcohol. I had, medicines were not even readily available. I mean, you know, all of my relatives now, majority of them all are all deceased. There's very few of the elders left. Maybe one. I doubt if there's any really. You know, and I just want there one day to be a cure for everything that our elders go through, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the heart attacks, the overweight. I mean, I just got back from working out a while ago. I run to work out for 30 minutes before I had to leave to get on the radio with you, because I'm so adamant about staying well, eating well, taking care of myself, because that's available to us now through our tribe wellness centers, and I take advantage of that. But back then, our family had nothing like that. We ate so much fried food, deep fried food, that I feel like I should have been a piece of fried meat, because it's just, we ate so much of it, you know. And I just remember that. Yes, but I remember that. Oh my gosh! Every time I sit down to a meal, all it was fried.
Everything.
And you see the grease sitting on the table.
Yeah. It's like eating in Louisiana. Louisiana, you go into a restaurant, everything's fried on the menu. There's nothing that's
absolutely
not fried.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes. And that's one thing about trying to do cleaner eating now and everything else. I mean, it evolves. And we are evolving. We're still evolving to this day. But I'm just thrilled to death for our tribe to have these wellness centers and be able to have and talk about diabetes and wellness and trying to get our people on a better track of living longer and taking better care of themselves. Because in my life with my mom and my dad, I mean, you know, as I said, we had a great home. We had a good life. We had an Indian home that was built back then that we lived in, a very nice brick home, but it was all provided by the Choctaw Nation at that time. And I felt very fortunate that we did. My dad built a home for us, and then he sold that house because my dad was a trader. He would, if somebody come along wanting to buy whatever, he'd sell it. If he could make $5 off of it, he made $5 off of it. So that's just how our life was. So we moved all over our little community, and we had built a nice home. I felt like a very nice home with three bedrooms, and it was very nice. We got to live in that home probably about maybe a year, and he sold that. We moved into a little trailer house, and then we got an Indian home, and we moved into a very nice brick Indian home, and I knew that would be our home. We would not ever move again, because this was where we were going to stay. And when my dad and mom both passed away, they inherited the home to me, and so I kept the home for quite some time. I really hated to depart with it, but it was in the little community I was born and raised in, and I didn't see myself going back there to live or anything, so I eventually sold the house. But, you know, I still go by sometimes and just, you know, drive down the road and go look at it, because there's some great memories there in that little community.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's your roots, right?
Yes, it is. It sure is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something else. Janie, tell us a little bit about your first job in gaming and how everything evolved from there. You know, what that journey was like.
Oh, that journey has been something, because still is a journey, and I've loved every minute of it. I started in 1987 in high stakes bingo. We bought about probably 75 acres south of town. That was a vision of our chief at the time, Hollis Roberts. I don't give the man a lot of credit for a lot of things he did, but I do give the man credit for having a vision to buy that property south of town and having a vision for what he thought would be a quick infusion of cash that would take our tribe to a level, a new level, give our members services that they needed and be able to put some money back into our coffers, and it definitely did. I mean, I went to work there as a floor manager. I worked from the ground up. That was on the floor managing the bingo operation as far as the pull tabs, the bingo paper, all of the cashiers.
That must have been amazing, because bingo was hot.
Oh, bingo was big then. Big time.
Big.
Yes, it was.
This
it was high
like,
stakes, let me tell
like,
you.
Yeah.
I remember when we had $100,000 games and $10,000 jackpot nights, and you know, but that's where we all grew up. I mean, every one of us is still even associated in our gaming environment. They all started in bingo. I mean, we have a council member that just won his first election this year in a council seat. He started grill cooking at that high stakes bingo back in probably 1990. He worked his way all the way through high stakes bingo into the casino environment and won his tribal council election this year. So proud of him. I mean, to me, that's
amazing.
Something I'm proud of. Those are young people that I feel like I have mentored, I have grown with, I have pretty much raised, and I have coached. And now I see those people stepping out, wanting to give back to their tribe, wanting to be a part of this tribe, wanting to make this tribe successful, and that's their way of giving back. So it's been a great journey. We went from high stakes bingo into 96 when we went into our first, I guess, no, it was 2006, I believe, when we went into our first, I guess, gaming kind of gaming operation, you might say. It was just when we added on to or built our first casino, basically. So it was that was very exciting for us.
That must have been an incredible experience, the first day when the doors opened.
Oh, yes, it was. I mean, you know, we had had skill games, and we had had Mega Bingo
but
and things like that.
But nothing like this.
No, nothing like this. I mean, it was a phenomenal, and you know it's a whole new ball game too. I mean, you had to be on your toes, and we had to learn quick what it was all about. We had to learn quick what the expectations were. We had to learn quick about the gaming environment. We started all just with a game called VGT. I don't know if you've heard of video gaming technology.
Yeah.
An awesome Class 2 game for Oklahoma. I mean, a great game, and it's pretty much the game that set our niche in the casino industry. And I have to give credit to VGT because that's but I give credit to a gentleman you know. I've mentioned his name a million times, and that's Mr. John Marley, who actually brought those games to us in Oklahoma. And it's been just success ever since.
Yeah, it's amazing. And what I love about you is you're very passionate, and you really talk a lot about mentorship and how it's important to pass it on and teach people, and everybody should be doing that. I've heard you speak about that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, to me, you know, I've always had mentors in my life. I mean, of course, my dad and my mom were one of my greatest mentors, I guess, and Mr. Marley was another one, but I had a lady in Baldwin, Oklahoma that was a mentor to me. She was a little lady that I just had always admired. She gave me my first polled Hereford cow. Okay, that's what she gave me for a graduation gift. All right, now that's a cow that I really didn't even, we'd never really raised cattle or anything like that, but she gave me my first Hereford cow. So I thought, okay, what am I going to do with a Hereford cow? But, you know, I managed to get that cow over to a pasture and get it in with some other people that helped me manage it and take care of it. And, you know, she was a great mentor to me. And she was just a single lady. She was a school teacher, and she had such ethic and work ethic and credibility and just a dominating woman. But she was, I guess, that's when I really started watching women in my life. My mom was another one, and then this English this teacher was very. I was so impressed with her the way she carried herself, the way she conducted herself, and she run a ranch, a cattle ranch. She taught school, and she was single. Her husband had passed away, you know, many years ago. She never remarried, but she maintained and took care of everything. And I just was at awe with her about all that. And I think she kind of just took me under her wing. And, you know, I've always admired women in powerful positions. I think I love women in powerful positions.
Well,
I'm all about women in powerful positions. Yes, absolutely.
So I know there's a lot of people out there that, you know, are curious about that. And you know, women in gaming. And you've been an inspiration to so many women. What is your message to them?
You know, and I don't even think that I'm an inspiration to anyone. I really don't. A lady told me that today, though. She said, Jenny, you don't understand, whenever you come into a room or you go into a program or whatever, people know that things are going to change. You're going to make, you are going to make something happen. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, you just do. She said, you make things happen. I said, I don't make things happen. I mean, I don't like things. I said, you know, she said, no, because you don't like for somebody to brag on you. You don't like for somebody to give you recognition for something. She said, but you don't understand how many people you touch. You know, and
so
I don't think about it, but then I do look at a lot of the women around me that have been elevated in just our environment, just in our casinos themselves, or just in our tribe. And, you know, we've got some great women that have been elevated in our operations today. Majority of every one of our GMs out in our properties today, are, with exception of probably three or four, are women that started from ground level and worked their way up to GM levels today. And I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud when I see any woman being recognized or being elevated to a leadership role. And that's what impresses me about Women of Gaming and the Global Women of Gaming. We have a number of our ladies here that went out to G2E this year. I was going to go out. I was supposed to be on a panel, and I got laryngitis, couldn't talk, I couldn't travel, and it was pretty disappointing for me because I was on a panel with some women that inspire me daily, but I would have loved to have been able to be on the panel with these ladies and been able to talk about the things that we were going to talk about on the panel. And it was about women in our positions we are, but what it took to get in those positions and what it took us to stay in the positions and maintain. And you know, I sometimes feel like it was a daily grind in a way, even in my environment, because I had an executive director that come in over me. He didn't really like me being in the role that I was in before I become the executive director, but he wanted to find fault with a lot of things that I did or a lot of things, maybe decisions that I made. And, you know, I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to let that happen. I mean, I had not, I worked hard. I was committed. I had never run to the chief or the assistant chief or anyone and rant and raved about this guy. I easily could have, but
problems.
I didn't.
Yeah.
No, there wasn't any way. I was going to take care of my own problem. I had to handle this myself, because whenever he seen me be able to go eye to eye with him and know I was going to hold my own, I think he realized pretty quick that, you know, she may be here to stay and I may not be here to stay, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
Because I was there to stay. I was going to stay because I had done no wrong. And you could not find wrong with anything we had done. But, oh, man, he wanted to so bad, so bad. But, you know, he couldn't do it because we dotted every I and we crossed every T. We run very sound operations. But his thought was, just open the doors and they'll come. Now, that was how he thought. Just open the doors and they'll come. Now, I don't think you ever just open the doors to a casino and they just come.
No.
No, it just doesn't happen that way. No, it doesn't happen that way. I mean, you've got to know about your marketing. You've got to know about your markets. You've got to know about your players. You've got to know what kind of games they want to play. You've got to know so many different areas about that individual, why they're coming to your property. You want them to return. What's it going to keep them staying longer with you? But that was not – his thoughts were just, no, you just open the doors and they'll come. And I just – no, sir, they won't. That's not going to work. And it doesn't work in our environment here today, and it's not going to work. So eventually The end of the story is I'm still here, and I don't think we're talking to that gentleman tonight. You're talking to me. So that's kind of how that story ended, you know. But I've loved being able to do work construction. I've loved being able to get involved in the construction of all of our properties. I've learned a lot in construction. I've worked with some great men and great women in construction. Carol Carter is another great one from EGAZ out of Las Vegas. Another lady that I definitely admire and look at as a mentor every day. But, you know, it's not always been an easy road. I mean, you know, there's tough, it's a tough road for we as women, but I think it's getting better. I think we're getting to be more accepted. I think that we've paved our way, and I think we've proven that, we can handle it. We can handle it. We put our britches on just like you do.
I love it. It's great. When you look across Native nations, what do you see today? What do you see, you know, what do you see and how do you see that evolving?
I see some very, very successful tribes. I was at the Five Civilized Tribe Intertribal Council here in Oklahoma just last week. I sat and listened to a number of the tribes, the chiefs speak. And I see tribes that are very progressive. I see tribes that, in some cases, are very concerned about their state coffers, their own state coffers. And I see tribes that definitely, as I told the chief that day, I said, you know, we are a powerhouse, and we should have it. We should be at the table with state legislators and senators, helping to work through any budgets that they have. I mean, look at what all we've done as Indian country. To me, Indian country has a lot of our states could learn a lot from Indian country if you want to get right down to it. I think that Indian country has proven, their success. They have proven that we have great regulations. We are great regulatory bodies. We have proven that we know how to make money, and we know how to be good stewards of our monies. And that maybe comes from all of the hardships we've all been through, but I think I really feel like the tribes today are very progressive. I feel like the tribes will continue to be progressive. I feel like the tribes will start looking outside just their brick and mortar at various different diversifications that they can look at, and I think they're doing that today. So I see tribes continuing to flourish and continue to be a power to reckon with.
Yeah, things are really evolving really, really quickly. So
they
are. What is your message to the next generation coming up? The younger people that are coming up. What is your message to them, and what do you want them to remember?
My message to them is to never give up. Dream every day. I have a little eight-year-old granddaughter. And I told her, I said, what do you want to be one day? She said, well, I don't know. I said, you need to start thinking right now what you want to be. I said, you know, Mimi would love for you to be a veterinarian. She said, why do you want me to be a veterinarian? I said, because. I said, you love animals. You love how to, you talk to animals. You love animals. You understand animals. I said, well, you're to be a veterinarian. I mean, she's 8 years old, and I'm already talking to her about what her future needs to be. And I think that's what our families need to be doing today to every one of our young people is talking to them now about your futures. Where do you need to be? Go to college. Get in college. The tribes can help you go to college. My goodness, there's all kinds of opportunities for our kids to go to school nowadays. Get a degree. But if you're not, maybe you're not a college material, then go to a tech school. Go get some form of a technical training so that you know there's something you can always fall back on. But have a goal. Have goals. And go after your goals on a daily basis, and check them off whenever you meet a goal. But get you another goal. Never accept that they're all done now. Okay, I'll step back. No, you continue to strive and work hard every day. But never ever accept defeat in your life. Never ever. If you're knocked down, get back up. I mean, that's what I say every day. I mean, it's just I talk to some of these young people that come in. You know, they're so defeated sometimes just from, you know, they have point systems they have to work at with work. They have different types of lifestyles they want to live. But, you know, they've had children at a young age, and they're trying to figure out how to balance life. you know, it's tough. It's hard. I mean, nobody told you this is going to be all roses. I mean, and if they did, they were completely wrong. Because let me tell you, life's hard. But the main thing is, go at it every day like it's the last day you got on earth. Work hard. Strive for success. I mean, that's what I would tell any young people, any young person growing up. And also looking at the industries that are out there, where do you want to be? What industry do you want to get into? I mean, and then find yourself someone, a mentor, a coach, someone that you can, an elder, that can guide you along the way. But never lose focus.
Great. I love it. Fantastic message. Let's. Should we take some questions? Because I know we got some, I can see we got some people here waiting. What do you think?
That's fine. I guess we can.
All right. Okay, hang on. Hello, welcome to GT Radio.
Hi. How are you today?
How are you? Good.
I'm well. I had a question. I wanted to go into a little bit more about the women in casino industry and maybe see if you had any advice, maybe three things of advice that you can give to a woman maybe starting her career in the casino industry.
I would say the main advice I would have to give you, and that's just the advice that I think that I was given myself as I started into this lifestyle. You've got to find a balance. I mean, you know, when I got into it, I loved it. I loved the energy about the casino environment. I love the work ethic. I love the life. I love the fast pace. You've got to find a balance. That's the first and foremost, the most important thing. Don't forget your home life. Never forget your home life. But I think it's very important that you give the best you can every day. You need to prove that you're worth the company. And I think that's something that we all as women sometimes have to struggle with. I think that you need to wake up every day, present yourself well in the office environment. I think that you another thing is, don't ever let yourself get so wrapped up in the minutiae of all of the inner workings of what all is going on and all the gossip and everything that's happening. I mean,
yeah.
you've got to pull yourself out and away from that. You've got to stand on your own feet. So much can get so pulled into everything about the daily grind. And I think it's very important that you, you know, I know whenever I was really engaged in our casinos and really there day and night, because I did. I let it overtake my life. I really did when I first went into this industry. I actually went through my first divorce because probably a lot of it was my work ethic, because I had just committed my life to the casino. I loved it. These associates need you. They need to talk to you. They need to you work out problems for them. You are really a mother hen to a majority of them. And I probably was even at that young of age when I first started with them, because I wanted to help all of them be able to look ahead, know there's so much more to life. I definitely don't party with them. Don't drink with them. You've got to be the boss the next day. You've got to be, you're not there for queen of the day. I mean, you're there to make some tough calls. You're not going to be the queen every day, because you're gonna probably get in the middle of some of them sometimes. But always stand your course. Always be very fair. And that's another thing that's hard to do at times, because there's people you might want to lean a little closer to that you might want to work through some problems with, but you've got to be fair. So I know I said many, many things, and I hope I said something that touches on something that you're dealing with at the moment, but be yourself. Mainly be yourself.
That's great. That's cool. All right. Was that a good answer?
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight.
Thank you. Great question. Very inspiring answer. Thank you so much. All right, let me go to the next one here. Hello, welcome to GT Radio. You have a question for Janie.
Yeah, hey, this is Matt Laren calling in. How are you guys?
Good.
Doing good.
How are you, Matt? Yeah, great.
Good, good. I wanted to talk about, Janie, your fun zone. It's pretty unique what you guys have done with that, and I'd like to hear what all else you guys are doing for the family experience at your resort.
You know, Matt, whenever we started with the fun zone, we're trying to decide, okay, what do we really want to be? What do we really want to be here? Do we want to be a tourist destination? Do we want to be just a casino environment? Or do we want a reason for the whole family to want to come to our property? And we all decided that we really, you know, Las Vegas didn't, they tried it, they didn't really do it all quite right and everything. So we all sat down together, and that's another thing. I always use a team effort. I'm not just going to be a one-man show. I'm not going to make all the decisions. I mean, we used it as a team effort. We all sat down together. We did a study of the whole market. But we wanted to have something that would be able to bring the whole family to our property. And so we all started talking about the district. We knew we wanted to have in our local community, we did not have a movie theater. We did not have a bowling area, location.
Alley?
We didn't have any kind of arcade games. I didn't want to call it a bowling alley because we don't want to be a bowling alley. We wanted to be more than just a bowling alley. We wanted to be more of a bowling experience. I mean, we wanted people not to just think of a bowling alley because we're offering you so much more than just you're going to get at the bowling alley. So
I love it. It's
we wanted to be really an experience from the bowling experience and have that whole district be an experience for us. And let me tell you, that's been one of the most successful things that we have, other than our Oasis pool area, that's one of the most successful things we have done is bring in that district environment. Because of our 50-mile radius around us, there really wasn't much for families to do, any place to really go. Well, now this has helped that whole radius be able to come into our market now and actually offer more trips for a lot of our guests to be able to come in, bring their kids can go to the movies, or the kids can go to the arcade, or mom and dad can go play the slots for a little while, or dad can go play poker, or mom can go to the spa. So it's really become a true family destination, and that district has really been the driver.
Wow.
Oh, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Did you have
very
another
good,
question,
very
Matt?
Good. I love it.
Anything else?
No, the only thing I did want to make a comment on is when Janie said, you know, in Oklahoma, you know, specific Indian country is a powerhouse, you know, or the tribes are a powerhouse. One of my, about 5 years ago, the Tulsa World had a picture of all the chiefs of the five civilized tribes, and the caption was, five of the most powerful people in Oklahoma. And I just always thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
That's
yes,
a great
it is.
Story.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Matt. That was
and they
amazing.
Are a powerhouse. They definitely are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's pretty incredible. Great.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Matt.
All right.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Let me see who we have here. Hello, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Janie.
Hi, yes, this is Lauren, and I'm actually on the publishing side of the industry, but I did have a question for Janie from the tribal side. What do you see as your biggest challenges in gaming in the next 5 years with, you know, all of these trends of, like, esports and skills gaming, and what do you see as the biggest challenges, exciting or otherwise, for the tribal sector of gaming?
Well, definitely esports. I mean, we've already tried some esports tournaments in our property there in Durant because that's definitely one of the new up and coming. I think millennials are going to be the biggest things for us is trying to figure out what we can do to be able to attract the new age of spend out there that we need to get into our properties. So that's definitely going to be a challenge, and we're going to be real creative with how we set ourselves up for that. I think we've got to have some good creative gaming experiences. I think you've got to have other experiences in your property other than just gaming. I think we're going to all start thinking outside the box. We're going to start looking at a lot of different amenities we might be able to offer into our properties to be able to attract more traffic. Our games have got to get very creative. I think they're going to be very challenging, I think, for our new age that's coming up. I think iGaming is going to be something that's going to be probably a threat to us eventually as it begins to get its feet around it. It's going to be an impact to us. So we've got to be aggressive. We've got to be out front. We've got to be looking and researching and thinking ahead. But I love the challenges. I think it's a. I think it's all going to be great challenges for us to continue to look ahead, to investigate, to see what's out there, to understand what we can bring into our properties, to be diverse. We've got to really, I think, diverse our floors maybe even more, with more electronics, with more. Maybe it's how we set up our environments, is our lounges. Maybe we have more lounge seating. Maybe we have more interactive gaming for the age of players now that want to come in and they want to interact more with their gaming. So I think it's a number of many scenarios I would have to say we've got to start all looking at. But we've got to be real courageous, I think, and start thinking outside the box and being aggressive. We can't sit and wait. We've got to start being aggressive and looking ahead.
Yeah, that's great. And a lot of it has to do with hard work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of traveling around, a lot of going to see what's working, going to trade shows, going to find out what's new and up and coming. You know, that's going to be some of our best, I think, our best homework we could do.
Yep. All right. Does that answer your questions?
Yes, thank you so much.
Do you have any other questions that you'd like to ask?
I kind of wanted to ask one more thing, if that's okay.
Sure,
Jamie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As a fellow female in this industry, who were some of your mentors as you were coming up in the ranks, and who were some of your mentors? Were they within your organization, or were they outside of gaming?
There was a number of people, I think, inside the organization when I first went to work for the Choctaw Nation in 1982, just at our headquarters. I had a number of mentors there. I had a lady that I still have a connection with to this day, and she was one of our directors over our program. And, you know, I feel like she gave me some good advice. She guided me in some great directions. She pretty much, you know, told me that, you know, she knew I was going to be a go-getter. She said that from day one. She said, you know, you're going to go somewhere with the tribe. She said, you are a go-getter, and they will see you. They will see that as you are somebody that they will want to move around. She said, because you're not somebody that's just going to sit behind a desk. I mean, you've got a great personality. She said, I don't think you've ever met a stranger. And she said, you need to leverage those attributes that you've got. She said, because you can go far with this tribe. You can make a difference. And that was just one of the ladies that I really, she embraced me when I went to work at the Choctaw Nation. I didn't really know her before then. And then, as I was saying to Tino earlier, I had a teacher in my local community that I always admired. She was a workaholic. She was a lady that, you know, ran a cattle ranch and also taught school and taught Sunday school and everything else. But she,
wow.
And she did it from daylight to dark. I mean, she never,
wow.
But you never heard her moan or groan. I mean, she was up bright and early every day, and she worked hard. And I just think that's given me a lot of my work ethic. I mean, I just don't find a reason to be sick and not go to work every day. I wanna be at work every day. Maybe it's because the age I'm getting now. God, I don't even want to think about retiring because I don't feel the age I am, and I don't feel like that I need to be retiring or going home to put my feet up. I don't even think about it, and I don't want to do that because I still have so much to give to the tribe. I still have so much I want to do for our tribe. I want to still could change lives. So. You know, many people were mentors to me and coaches to me, and but I've taken everything I've learned from each one of those individuals, and I have never forgotten some of the little simple things that they've said or the memories that they have that stay with me from just watching those ladies. Maybe it wasn't anything they said, but it was watching how they conduct themselves every day in the work environment.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing, and it's mentorship is so important. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Great stuff. Okay, let's see what we got here. Hello, welcome to GT Radio. Do you have a question for Janie?
Hi, Janie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great. This is something normally I wouldn't actually ask, but I think it's important just because of the current situation with, you know, with Harvey Weinstein and things like that as far as sexual harassment. What do you think, as far as in the gaming business, how prevalent do you think it still is or has been? I don't think I necessarily need, you know, you to explain anything that's happening personally, but do you think that it's still an issue that needs to be addressed? And what kind of advice would you give people that are facing those situations these days?
That's a great question, and that is a hard question. That's a great
really
question,
great
though,
question.
And it is it's a tough question for me because I was a victim of that, definitely a victim of it, and I didn't go. I went immediately at when it happened. I went to the second in command chief, and I complained and sought my filed my petition. And finally, you know, I had my say and I had my day, and I think it's something that yes, it probably is, and it still happens today in our world. I mean, it just does. It just is. But I don't think any woman should ever get themselves in a position where they allow that to happen to them. I think if it happens to them, they immediately need to go to their human resource. They need to go to the next power that be, and they need to file a complaint immediately. You know, it scared me to death when that first happened to me. I had no clue. I did not know even how to handle it. The power that did that to me was someone very much in control, and I had to really search myself, and I had to really decide what I was going to do, because basically I would have been fired probably if I had said something immediately. But
yep.
I let it digest on me, and before I ever said a word about it, and then finally I decided I'm not going to do this. I'm not working under this kind of condition, and I'm not going to be done like this. And I did nothing to cause this, nothing at all. And I'm not going to allow it to happen. And then to come find out, I wasn't the only woman that it happened to. It happened to many others, and we all were at the courthouse. I was the last person that was going to testify, and I would have been the one to probably send the gentleman to prison. But he was found guilty before I had to go testify. Praise God for that. And he was sentenced to prison. But
wow.
Yes, it is. It's prevalent. It is. It's something that, yes, has to be addressed, needs to be addressed, and needs to be talked about. It is something we don't need to sweep under the rug and not talk about. It needs to be talked about.
Yeah, and there's been a lot going on that stimulated those conversations. Do you have another question that you'd like to ask, since that one was so good?
I think the other question would be, you know, as a, I think you're a role model. How do you take that in terms of, you know, somebody asked you a question earlier about being, you know, your mentors, but I would assume that you have a pretty large role of being a mentor yourself. How do you take that responsibility?
I take that responsibility very serious. I feel like that I'm probably watched every day, just how I conduct myself, how I present myself, how I handle myself in a meeting. So I always just tell myself that I know people watch me. They're watching me. They watch how I conduct myself. They watch what I do in my life. And I'm representing this tribe every day. And I always think of myself as I'm representing this tribe. How would I want someone to think of my tribe? And I think when they see me, I feel like that I'm a representation of that tribe. So I conduct myself in the utmost highest regard that I possibly can. I present myself well, you know, and every young lady that works with me now or under me, or I ever have a chance to even talk to in any way, form, or fashion, that's what I've always telling them. You know, you get up each day and you dress like you're going to the biggest convention there is. I mean, you dress for success is what you do. You dress for success. And you also You don't do anything that you feel like you're going to have to justify, you feel like that you're going to have somebody question you about. Don't even begin to do that. Don't even go that direction. I mean, always know that you are being watched, and always know that someone's probably jealous of you being in the position you're in. They probably are, because they don't understand, why can't I be in that position? Well, there's a lot of reasons why somebody's not in a position, and one is probably, a lot of it is work ethic, a lot of it is commitment, a lot of it is dedication, integrity, and I can go on and on. But I really, and the girl that works under me right now that's probably mentoring, and one, she is the one I would mentor and say, you're going to be the successor for my job one day. I talk with her each day, and she, you know, she struggles with some things where she has to really have a lot of one-on-one with associates. She's not really good in communicating. And I said, you've got to get better at communicating. You've got to be better to talk to people. You've got to, when you go down the hall, you've got to make eye contact. You've got to speak. You've got to smile. You got to let them know you like them. Right now, they all think you hate their guts. I said, so get a smile on that face or figure out where it's at. So that's what I say to them. I mean, I'm honest. I don't know how else to be but honest to them and tell them that, you know, you're going to have to, you can't just have all the book sense in the world and the business sense in the world. You've got to have some leadership skills.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. Those were great questions. Thank you,
Jamie.
Wow, great questions. Great questions. All right. I think we got enough time for one more here. Hello, welcome to GT Radio. Do you have a question for Janie?
Great, yeah. Hi, Janie. Listen,
hello, how are you doing?
Great, thank you. You drive by the old homestead. Do you ever reflect on, okay, back then I thought I would be at this point in my career as opposed to, you know, where you are now?
I reflect on that every day. Believe me, if you would have told me, I would have working in the. Yes, it's an awesome question, because if you would have told me I'd be working in a casino environment, or I would have never thought a casino environment. What are you talking about? No, I would have never thought that. You know, my goal was, my dad's goal was really that I go to work for the tribe. He really wanted me to go to work for the tribe, so. You know, I knew that was going to happen one day, and I knew I'd go to work for the tribe. But when I thought going to work for the tribe, I just felt like that would be in one of the programs the tribe provides. I thought I would be working in one of the programs that, you know, helped our people. It helped to give back to our tribal members. It helped to change a life. It helped to, you know, it helped to do give a service back. That's where I felt and thought I would probably be. And when I started with the community health representatives, you know, I worked in that environment for probably three years, and then I went into the Women and Infant Children program. I love the Women and Infant Children program. I love that. I got to go out in the field. Mm-hmm. I got to travel. I got to, you know, be around little kids. I love children. And I just kind of felt like, okay, this is my niche. I mean, I think I found it. You know, I worked my way up to assistant director in that position and even worked my way up to director. And I thought, you know, this is it. I'm happy. I'm content. And then All of a sudden, here comes a big road, a big curve in my life, and a big road change, and I'm at the stop sign, and here's a huge new high stakes bingo coming alive, and wow, that sounds enticing to me. That sounds like such a great opportunity. So, no, I would have never ever thought. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to be an airline stewardess. Is what I wanted to be. That's what I really wanted to be. I wanted to be an airline stewardess. I love people, and I thought I'll be a hell of an airline stewardess.
You'd have been a great airline stewardess. Are you kidding?
That's what I thought.
You'd probably
every
be
time
running
I
the
plane,
airline
thought,
in like 2 years. You'd be running the airline in 2 years.
I think about every time I get on a plane. I thought, wow, I could be doing this job. I could do this easy. You know, in my sleep. But no. To say I would be doing what I'm doing today, Lord, no. I would have never, ever, I would have said, you're crazy. No, I won't. But I wouldn't take it for anything else in the world now. I love it. I love it. I love the drive every day. I love the lifestyle. I love the changing of lives I've seen from our revenues that we've generated. I see how that goes back into our communities. And, you know, I wouldn't change anything in my life. I love every bit of it.
That's great. Do you have another question?
Oh, Jay, look, I think you kind of covered it. But hey, well, if you're going to work for the airlines, which airline would you work for?
Oh, that, I don't have a clue on that one. Whoever offers me the, whoever wants to offer me the best deal, I guess, huh? You, I couldn't even begin to answer that one. I'm really upset with a couple of them right now. I had a big delay the other night, and I had to land in a different city and everything else. So yeah, I don't know if I want to talk about the airlines right now.
And the customer service was terrible.
it really was. I definitely could help them a lot there.
I think with the exception of a few airlines, I think the customer service is pretty bad at the airlines. They got a bad rap. They got a lot of work to do. Oh,
absolutely.
God. Yeah, don't take a cue from them, that's for sure. But some of them are good. Some of them are great.
Yeah, they are. Some of them are good.
Thanks. That was those were some great questions. So, Janie, this has been amazing. I wanted to wrap it up, but we started it off script, so we're going to wrap it up off script. So, what are the Janie Dillard final thoughts on life?
Yeah.
You know,
well, the final thought
message?
I would have to say, my message would be love life to its fullest every day because you don't know what tomorrow holds.
Oh, that's great. And that's so true.
That's what I live by. I love life to its fullest every day. Yes, I do.
Oh, I love that. Janie, you've been amazing. Thank you for being on the show. I got a Christmas special coming up. And I want you to be a co-host on the special, and I'm going to have another guest join us, a GM or a CEO. Would you do that for us?
I thought maybe you'd want me to sing a song or something, or really do something.
Well, you know what? That's going to be part of it. Well, I'll sing a couple of
good
Christmas carols.
Absolutely. Right up my alley. Right up my alley.
Okay. Now you're producing and writing the show. It's great. I love it.
Thank you for the invite. Appreciate that very much.
Okay, you got it. So we'll talk soon, and we'll see you soon. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, and have a great evening.
We will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was just what an incredible show. I'm speechless. She's just an amazing woman. She's got such amazing energy. And, it was just a delight to have her on the show. Anyways, we're going to have another show, I think, in 2 weeks. And I hope you'll join us. It's going to be, should be really good. We're going to also have a Christmas special, which I'm going to announce. And, it's going to be really great. So next show we have is Byron Bighorse. He's the CEO of Osage, a good friend of mine. Great guy, just a great guy. I knew him before he became CEO. I think I've known him for 10 or 20 years, and he's always been a great guy. He's got some great stories. Anyways, signing off here at GT Radio, and hope that if you find someone that has a story, you'll have time to listen. Have a good night.